Well, hello, all you beautiful regenerative agriculture fans. Today, we're going to talk about planning for success. Let's talk progress year over year. One of the things that I hear from people new to homesteading or new to farming and their own food production is overwhelm. And I really feel for them because when we first moved to our farm, we were in the same space between getting the home set up and wanting to do all the things and just being so pumped for owning our first farm. Well, I personally felt like a spinning top and not in a good way. Well, coming up on 12 years later, I can say, sure, some of the journey was rough, but I'm also the first one to share some of my things that I've learned in order to help you stay on track for your own dreams. So today, we're going to talk about the 7 rules for sanity on a new farmstead. I am Judith Farrell Horvath, shepherdess, milkmaid, and founder at Fairhill Farm in Lancaster, Ohio. We rotationally graze our Katahdin sheep. We enjoy milk from our dairy goats, and we make soaps and shampoo bars too from it. We have beyond organic vegetables, fruit, and flower gardens. We keep free-ranging turkeys, enjoy eggs from our own chickens, and now we've grown again. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe, like the show, and follow us. It helps others find their way here and keeps the content coming. So I want you to enjoy slow and steady progress for the win in your own dreams. Let's dive into the rules for homestead progress. We moved into our farm in the middle of July, and everything was overgrown and, quite honestly, out of control. Also, the house itself had a lot of surprise problems. Being July, it was way beyond a reasonable time to put in a garden. We had more pressing matters, like stopping the leaks in our house, filling dumpsters with rubbish that was left in the home, getting to know our land, and just keeping the air conditioning running. Like many others who purchase a rural property that they're rehabbing from long-term neglect, we encountered daily oddities around the place. Hundreds of Milwaukee Best beer cans all around, a vintage washboard sink stuck in a tree. It had been leaned against a tree and then forgotten a decade or two ago, and then the tree grew around the sink, trapping it. So yes, we literally have a sink stuck in a tree back behind our barn. The reason I bring this up is because of my first piece of advice. Number one, reserve space for weird discoveries and unexpected things to happen. If they don't, good on ya. You're ahead of the game, and consider it a life bonus and a win. Enjoy evenings on the porch and watch the grass grow. You earned it. Let's talk about number two. Looking back, we did a great job of prioritizing things, but in the moment, it felt like we had made the biggest error of our lives and we were in over our heads because what we had planned was nothing like what we encountered. So here's what I learned. We were measuring ourselves based on a plan for a project that didn't match the current situation. This was self-defeating and destructive. My husband was frustrated over the daily horrible discoveries inside the house. Things like faulty wiring, leaks, structurally unsound situations. He was overwhelmed with all of the house fixes, and he focused on them. Meanwhile, I was overwhelmed with all of the outside stuff because there was zero that I could do about most of the things that he was working on and almost zero that I knew about the outside stuff. I'd never even driven a tractor before. So I was way outside of my area of comfort and my own abilities. I was learning as I went. So of course everything took 3 times longer than expected. It was terrible. We were both busy on different things, and every day we were venting frustration to each other. Meanwhile, we were both working full-time, commuting, and we had 2 young kids. I felt like I was having my head held underwater. My husband was miserable and angry at the former owner who had lied through her teeth on the disclosure document. I felt like I wasn't making any headway towards transforming this rural property into the working farm that we had talked about. It was just like whitewater rafting every day. I was so consumed with being pulled off plan that I failed to stop, breathe, and talk to my husband and make a new one. So that brings us to lesson number 2. Have a plan and be committed to it, but also be willing to change it when it doesn't make sense. Don't abandon a plan when things go sideways or decide to just wing it. Form a new one that makes sense based on the new circumstances and stick to that one. Over time, we got things fixed. We made it through the summer and fall and into winter. That gave us a chance to regroup, prioritize, and right the ship. We knew that the first year would be a learning year, but boy, was it rougher than we had expected. We had a big picture that was future-based transformation of the property, but when we were in operational firefighting mode, we were failing to efficiently deal with the middle ground. And that was some of the shorter strategies from month to month and even year to year. We all wanted to fill the farm with a bunch of different kind of animals. Me, being the primary animal caregiver, I was adamantly opposed until we had perimeter fencing and our barn fixed, which was no small matter because fencing is expensive and the barn needed a lot of work. It didn't even have a front door. The weather just whooshed in. Anyway, I refused to agree to anything more than a dozen chickens because we were already chicken experienced. And there, in the face of pressure and temptation, I found myself making a proclamation. I didn't read this anywhere. It just sort of came out of nowhere one day. One new species per year. I must have said it in a way that resonated with everyone. That turned out to be one of the rules that served us well. And this is for a couple reasons. First, it's unfair to an animal to be unprepared to care for it properly. From a standpoint of knowledge, management, nutrition, health and behavior, whatever. Second, it's unfair to yourself to add more complexity to your daily routines, especially if you're just starting out. Because adding another species adds an additional group of steps, and it's a learning curve for everyone. Third, it's an expense and additional kind of feed, pans, equipment, containing, bedding, housing, etc. Fourth, it's another kind of yield as well as manure to manage. Adding two species, therefore, is not an incremental add. It quickly becomes exponential. That's why doing one new species per year is our rule. Now, it takes one trip around the sun to understand all the seasons with that new animal in its life and go through a winter, enjoy its yield, etc. So 6 years in, 1 year, we didn't add any new species. And then the year after that, feeling confident and like I had gotten, air quotes, behind, we added two. Even after 6 years of experience, that was no bueno, just because of the complexity. So here's the amended third rule. One new species per year, no exceptions. And I'll clarify that by saying, if you miss a year, you don't get to double up the next. Some years, we didn't actually add a new species. We chose to add a dimension to something. For example, keeping sheep. Extra dimension year, we added a ram. We had dairy goats. 1 year, we added a dimension and brought in bred does. The year after that, we added a third dimension, a buck. And that's my corollary to Rule 3B. A breeding male animal is the effective equivalent to an additional species. And that's because it really changes the social dynamic and animal handling for humans. So 6 years in, we were hitting our stride, pretty happy with progress, but it felt so slow. I was feeling kind of frustrated that we hadn't gotten significantly closer to the farm we wanted to create. So I started looking back through all of the projects that we had done. And looking at the pictures, here's what I noticed. We had done a lot more than I had actually realized, in fact. And that's when I started making multi-year plans and writing down the stuff that we did every year and then celebrating it at Christmas when we would write down the stuff that we had gotten through every year. For me, I'd rather feel ahead than behind. And when I started just slowing down and focusing, I found that I was making more progress. I know it sounds crazy, but it was the elimination of unrewarding things, the removal of extra ventures, the streamlining processes and steps, scheduling things at a time, and a sustainable rate of change and workload. That's when we started making really big progress. These things take time as well as analysis. So here's a few examples. We tried out a lot of different breeds of chickens just through the years. We are now standardized to just two kinds that we found works for us, our management, our land, our schedules, and what we expect from our chooks and the value in a quality bird. It's a combination of longevity and survival foraging ability, broodiness, and a lot of other factors, but it works for us. And by standardizing to just two breeds, we will be able to have self-sustaining flocks. We also learned that what works for us is having two separate flocks. One flock is housed out on pasture in a tractor surrounded by electronet, and the second is a very small one that free ranges around the house. We jettisoned all the other breeds. We've done the same with turkeys. We experimented with many kinds and narrowed focus. We did this with sheep. We did this with goats. This has really made life easier. Learn about a lot, pick what works, and focus on that. Streamline, simplify, make sure it's profitable, monetarily, time-wise, or product-wise. Anything that doesn't fit or doesn't work out gets removed. That's lesson number four. Continuous improvement takes stewardship and decisions. Be prepared to make those choices. Review your status regularly and keep optimizing your operation. You cannot keep everything. We have a working farmstead, not a charity. People come by and buy animals, or they visit, or they even come here to learn things. They always remark, "You have the nicest animals. How is it that they're all so friendly?" Well, it's quite simple. I don't keep jerks or escape artists. Anyone who doesn't get along with the others gets sold. Any animal that is dangerous or shows aggression towards a child goes to freezer camp. That is how I keep nice animals. And interestingly enough, over the generations, we've been selecting for temperament and manageability. Funny how that works. Back when we were getting started, we had a lot more jerks, and now they're rarely happening. It is interesting. Lesson number five, fiercely defend the quality of your life. Prioritize safety, manageability, and smooth operations. We are into our 11th spring here. Of course, there are things that need to be done. There's a never-ending list of projects and wishes, but we are noticing through the number of generations of our sheep, through the size of our fruit trees, through the maturity of our gardens, and our memory of weather patterns throughout the years, how far indeed we really have come. We realize that there's names for a dozen specific small areas of the land. We have history. And in remembering that history, we can walk and say, "Wow, look how far we've come. Remember when, blah, 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 whatever." And have a laugh. We regularly walk and enjoy the sunsets and sunny days, just for the sheer joy of it. Lesson number six, take the time to see how far you have come and enjoy that feeling of accomplishment. This year, our new species to add was a toss-up between feeder hogs or a milk cow. Sure, we had a lot of discussions. We went and milked an adorable Jersey. We spoke to local hog breeders, and in the end, we decided that we didn't need more milk or more meat. We already have more than we need with our sheep and our goats and our turkeys and our chickens. Meanwhile, we did sort of an environmental survey, and we realized that we're still dependent on the outside sources for a lot of produce, mainly fruit. So we opted for balance. We decided this is the year of the plant. So we got to it, adding a lot more trees, flowers, and hedges. Oh my goodness, so much more. Lots more for ourselves, for the pollinators, and for the wildlife, for the entire system. I learned so much in doing research. I had no idea how many different kinds of fruit-producing things we can grow here in Zone 6 in Ohio. It's amazing. Beyond apples, cherries, peaches, pears, nectarines. Yeah, there's kiwis, there's pomegranates, pawpaw, persimmon, nuts, berries of all kinds, and other edible landscaping plants. We are overjoyed at the discoveries and cannot wait to see the returns for this investment in the future of our food. We're in it for the long haul, so we are using permaculture design principles for our placement decisions and selecting additions this year. That means, from a permaculture standpoint, we use the 12 tenets. Observe and interact. Catch and store energy. Obtain a yield. Apply self-regulation and accept feedback. Use and value renewable resources and services. Produce no waste. Design from patterns to details. Integrate rather than segregate. Use small and slow solutions. Use and value diversity. Use edges and value the marginal. And creatively use and respond to change. These are great tenets, and you can use these in designing your farm setup. You can read more about permaculture in so many different places, but it is a lifelong journey to integrate these concepts into your own planning. So here's lesson number 7. Strive for systems which are sustainable, self-sufficient, and productive. So I know this wasn't a really long one, folks. I'll be getting back to the interviews coming next week, and we've got some pretty cool ones coming up soon and some other big news. But here's to another growing season. May this be your best year so far. Plan for success and it will be yours. And remember, if you're just getting started, your first garden is your worst garden. Do not give up. Do not lose hope. We all have up and down years, and it's all in the learning curve where all of the magic happens. Have a beautiful year, and I'll see you in the field. You can support this show by checking out FOOP Organic Biosciences. It's gardening season. Throw away your Miracle-Gro. No need to buy 17 different products for growing all organic veggies this year. Try FOOP. It's a revolutionary new plant food made with fish poop. It's FOOP, but it's not even fair to call it plant food because it's so much more. It's in a category of its own. It's a spectrum of beneficial bacteria, 11 strains of mycorrhizae, fish manure, fish emulsion, seaweed, volcanic ash, which has azomite in it, minerals, and elements. Using FOOP on your houseplants and garden is like a restock of all the micronutrients, macronutrients in the soil, plus a biological activity upgrade and repopulation at the same time. These products turn dirt into living soil. It's amazing, and they're certified organic. Comes in foliar spray, liquid cloning gel, and now an inoculated biochar, which is a total game changer if you ask me. Visit thefoop.com. That's www.thefoop.com, and use code REGEN at checkout for 10% off your entire order. That's code REGEN.